You're tuned into Decay Mac Podcast, online source for horror, thriller and sci-fi entertainment news. Exclusive interview. Russell Emanuel, director, Occupants.
Hello, I'm documentary filmmaker Annie Curtis, and this is 30 Days of Clean Living.
So I've set up cameras all over the house. They're going to be recording 24/7 and uploading all the footage to a remote access server.
Are we really going to be doing this?
Like it or not, it's happening.
We'll see how it goes.
Dig in.
Satisfying.
Absolutely.
It just switches over, out of nowhere.
As unbelievable as it sounds, I think we just recorded an alternate reality. It alternates between filming our world and another parallel world.
There's a connection, a bond. It must be getting stronger.
Exclusive interview. Russell Emanuel, director, Occupants.
On Wednesday, August 30th, 2017, I had the pleasure to interview producer, director, editor, Russell Emanuel. His latest film titled Occupants released on VOD and explores an interesting science fiction topic, parallel universes. In our interview, we discussed the production, small budget influences on filmmaking, and we also delved into the topic of parallel universes and Star Trek. Does get some mention within the interview. With the latter, it is expected since actor Robert Picardo does star in Occupants. The synopsis to Occupants reads as follows. A documentarian named Annie has roped her husband into a project that involves setting up cameras throughout their house. Complications arise when the camera starts showing that same couple in an alternate universe. And before we introduce the interview with Mr. Emanuel, let's discuss the film for a bit. Inid, what was your opinion on Occupants, the topic itself? What resonated with you?
I mean, in terms of the movie, the way that it was coming, one couple looked there like it was good, and the other one looked there like it was evil. Am I right or wrong?
Yes, that is correct.
It's just the fact that at one point I just didn't get how the both the universe parallel got together, and then all of a sudden the other couple, the girl started noticing, and she just started throwing stuff back into the other parallel. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, oh, well, you're giving away some plot, though. You know, you gotta give warnings about that. You know, that's a spoiler alert. Stacey, what was your opinion on The Occupants?
It was a good film. It progressed so slowly, however. I think the the events didn't really kick off till a good almost hour in the film. And so from then it was like watching the life of another couple, pretty much.
Another spoiler alert. You guys.
Sorry.
Oops.
I didn't mean to do any spoilers.
You got two spoiler alerts.
Well, I was going to give a spoiler alert, but all I can say is the parallel universe theory is something that has been played out on YouTube. There's something called the Mandela Effect. And there were a lot of YouTube videos projecting how certain things were one way and then they are another way. And the whole theory is that there is a glitch in the matrix and we are living in some type of hologram or parallel universe. A very interesting concept. All I can say with the Mandela Effect, which does tie into this film in some way like that, is that it all depends on recollection. Perhaps as young adults, we perceive things one way, subconsciously or consciously, and then as we got older, we believe it to be something different. And that's the realization. Haley, Joanne, and Jeffrey, what were your thoughts on this film, The Occupants?
Well, it was a slow burn for one thing, but I can appreciate what a filmmaker does, that a filmmaker even makes a film to begin with, because that's hard work. But it's really cool to see. I'm a fan of the what is this genre?
Found footage.
I'm a fan of the found footage type of films. Like I've said before, Blair Witch Project and some of the paranormals. So it's really neat to see somebody try different ways of doing it. While this one is probably the same way as Paranormal Activity in a way, it's still neat to see somebody to be able to pull it off.
And this is where Haley and I differ. I really actually dislike the found footage genre for the most part. There are the occasional times when it's done well, but for me personally, I think it's really, 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 really hard to do found footage well and make it believable, because part of the found footage thing is that it has to be well acted. Because you have to feel like that you are literally within the world of these people. And if it's not well acted, if you have gotten some actors who are, they're good. Maybe they're not necessarily film actors, maybe they're theater actors. You know, it depends on their acting style. But if it doesn't feel like 100% purely natural, it takes you out completely. And this film explores very interesting concepts. That said, I found it a little bit slow would probably be the best way to put it. It just, you know, I felt like there was some explanations going on to explain what was happening that just personally did not gel and vibe with me as an audience member, and that's where I'm gonna leave it.
great. Well, thank you everyone for taking the time to watch the film, and also could catch the full film review for Occupants on DKMag.com. And without further ado, here is our interview with director Russell Emmanuel.
Good afternoon. My name is Kenner Toulouse, founder and editor for DK Mag. And joining me this afternoon is Russell Emmanuel. He's a producer, director, and editor. Emmanuel's latest film, Occupants, is in film festival circulation, where so far it has won Best Sci-Fi Feature Award at Shrek Fest 2016. Thank you for your time this afternoon, Mr. Emmanuel.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Great. And I'm going to start off with an icebreaker question. How and when did the idea of Occupants develop?
Well, it was conceptualized by the writer, Julia Camera, from what she told me. She got the idea on a flight to Brazil. She's a Brazilian, and she lives in L.A., but she was visiting family. And this was back in, I think, around the summer of 2013. Then she got the idea of, you know, of this young couple and how they see a parallel version of themselves. And, you know, they see it from their house, and she's a documentarian. Basically, she modeled Annie Curtis, which is the main character, played by Breanna White, modeled her after herself because she is also a filmmaker. So she got the idea, and then my producer, Howard Nash, he found her script on a site called Inktip, and he optioned the script because it's about two main characters, in one location, interior, for the whole film, for the most part. And that means it could be done for cheap, and yet it could be a very effective story. And it really intrigued him. So the reason she agreed, Julia, to option the script to Howard is because Howard and I have worked on, at that point, was three previous feature films, and each of them had the actor Robert Picardo, who's the holographic doctor on Star Trek Voyager. So she knew we could get Bob Picardo to play a role in the film. And so she said, I will option the script. And so basically that's how it came about. We ended up shooting it, I think about 7 months later in October 2014. And then we completed it in December 2015. So that's pretty much where it is now. You know, we've been in, I don't know how many festivals. I'm really grateful for the run, including the award at Shriek Fest. I think it's been like 50 plus festivals now. And you can actually rent it or purchase it on Amazon. Just go to occupantsthemovie.com, and then there's a link to the site, to the Amazon site. So anyway, that's the gist of the story.
Oh, wow. it seems so fast. The script was found, and then it jumped right into production, and it just went right out to the press. It happened so fast.
We were very lucky. We went through a crowdfunding site called Indiegogo. We've never done it before, but okay. We saw the success story of I think it was the Veronica Mars movie. And of course, we did not raise like $4 million. I mean, that's how much they raised. But we did reach our goal, and plus 6%, so 106%, we were able to reach it. And it made it possible to shoot the film. And we had great actors. I mean, Robert Picardo, of course, he's just a pleasure to work with. But Brianna White as Annie Curtis and Michael Pagliacci as Neil Curtis. For me, I thought I couldn't have asked for better actors. Brianna, we auditioned 27 actresses. And she happened to be one of the last three. And we almost didn't have her on the roster for auditioning. So I was just very glad that she got a chance to audition. Because when we auditioned, just a couple of days before, production actually. It was the DP who was there, and then we already had cast Michael. So both of them, I wanted to see how she looked on camera, hence the DP. And then I wanted to see her rapport with the lead actor, you know, Michael. So to see if there was chemistry. And all three of us unanimously decided she was the best by far of all the actresses that we auditioned. And there were some great actresses, but she was Annie Curtis. And eerily, she was parallel Annie Curtis. I think it's even more eerie as her parallel self. Seriously, when she was parallel Annie, I mean, she even freaked me out sometimes. But then she smiled and became Brianna, and then I'm like, okay, that's just an actor.
That is the most challenging part for every filmmaker, the auditioning process, weeding out. And you have candidates that are exceptional. You just have to, like you mentioned, have to find that right chemistry.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was looking for, and it's subjective, of course. You know, I'm if somebody else had directed the film, it probably, you know, it would have been a different film.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's been a worse film. It's just a different film.
Right.
So for me, it was Brianna and it was Michael. And for me, I was just very happy with what we were able to accomplish over 10 shoot days. And it was just 10 shoot days. And it was 7 days. Yes, it was the first 7 days were the real couple. And then we transformed everything into the parallel world. Okay. And so that was the challenge, because once we transformed them, because for her, she had to dye her hair brunette. Mm. And for him, he just shaved off all of his facial hair. So there's no way really to go back. I mean, it would have been virtually impossible. I guess we could have like put a fake beard on him and then re-dyed her hair blonde, which we did after the shoot. But it's very expensive, and I don't think it would have been realistic. So we almost went the route of a wig for her, but then I realized it's always going to look like a wig.
Right.
And it just wouldn't have worked. So, you know, we made sure, and we had a great team, the DP, Emil Harris, you know, our first AD, Clifford Brakefield, production designer, Tatiana Klonoff, Nina Minnelli costume, I can go on and on. But they, we basically covered all the bases of everything we had to shoot for the real couple. Because we knew once we switched, that's it. We will not go back. So I just had a really great team. I mean, just really, it was a very conducive environment to work with. The actors were great. And this is kind of a little funny thing, but I called a rap for Annie Curtis and a rap for Neil Curtis because they rapped as their real selves. And then they transformed into their parallel selves. So then once we were done with their parallel selves on day 10, I called a rap for parallel Annie Curtis and parallel Neil Curtis. So essentially, they're like playing four characters. They're playing four characters total. And of course, then you had Robert Picardo, and he came in on day 4, and we called that Picardo Day. And that was one of our Indiegogo perks, is to be on set and to get to meet Mr. Picardo. Some people took us up on that offer. And I'm just really grateful to Bob Picardo that, you know, he agreed to do the film. And, you know, when he was there, we had the two main actors there also, even though technically he was not in the same room. But for performance sake, I wanted to make it more realistic. It's as if they were really talking to each other, and they were. They just happened to be off camera.
Right. Oh, that's interesting.
But yeah, but you know, I mean, I think it helps everybody. You know, for the actors, it helps them when there's a real presence there for them to talk to.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, we had it was a very tough shoot, but it was a great shoot. It was fun. Oh gosh, there were so many flies on set. I remember that. I don't know why. We had he was the fly swatter. That was the goal, swatting flies. And and I don't know, it was just, it was fun. It was very fun. I mean, I can go on and on. I mean, I have so many stories, but yeah.
But that's good. That's good. Oh, especially when you put your devotion and you're doing a thing that you love to do, you just want to express it to the whole world. That goes across the board for any medium.
Oh, yes. Yeah, of course. You know, you just hope it's entertainment, right? So you hope you entertain.
Exactly.
And I'm not going to please everybody. It's not going to happen. But, you know, I hope I'm able to, you know, for 81 minutes, which is the length of the film, I hope I'm able to, quote unquote, entertain somebody so that they could take their mind off the stresses of their own life, at least for 81 minutes.
Exactly. And to me personally, when I watched the film, Occupants has the aesthetic of like a three-act play, because everything is set in one location, in one environment setting. Why was this approach taken in filming in just one location as opposed to going out in different locations?
Well, I think I mentioned this before. It's budget. A lot has to do with the budget.
Okay.
But it took a script of Julia Cameron's nature to make it quote unquote exciting, because if you're in the same location for 80 minutes, it could be a really boring film. I mean, really boring. So, I mean, the fact that she wrote such a smart script really helped. And you're right, it is a three-act play. First act is found footage. It's just a documentary. You know, you're watching a documentary. The second half becomes science fiction. the second act. And then the third act becomes horror. And I think it's that aspect of it, which is the reason why we were able to get into a festival like Shriekfest, which is one of the top horror festivals in the U.S. And I was very grateful that we won, but the fact that we got in, I think it's because of Act 3, which was the horrific elements of the film. So I consider it a found footage sci-fi horror film.
That's an interesting combo.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And actually right now, Julia is writing the sequel to the first film because it left it open. And I kind of purposely did that because, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen the film, but basically I like to let the audience decide what happened after the quote unquote conclusion of the film.
Right.
It also leaves the door open, you know, for a potential sequel. And that's what she's writing. We also have a comic book tie-in to the film drawn by a DC Marvel Comics artist named Dave Beatty. And it was because of my associate producer, Eric Kask, who was the director of the Phoenix Comic-Con film festival. And I met him like 10 years ago for another film that was in that festival called Girl with Gun. He suggested trying to do a comic book tie-in. So we actually did a crowdfunding campaign to see if we can raise money for a comic book. And it's a one-shot, so it's like 24 pages. And we raised 212%. So, you know, I was like, okay, this is great, because it gave us money to work with for publicity also. But yeah, basically the comic book tie-in is actually a side story, which takes place during acts one and two of the feature film. So the major characters in the feature become minor characters, like cameos. And then minor characters become major characters. But it's basically another case study. The film Occupants is put together by the Peterson Research Institute, run by Dr. Peterson, played by Robert Picardo, and it's case number 831, which coincidentally, by the way, is actually modeled after my birthday, August 31st.
I kind of figured it was a tie-in.
That's a little in joke. So case 831 is August 31st, my birthday. And the comic book tie-in is case 285. So we tied it in together. And I hope people like that tie-in. But, you know, it was fun. It was very fun. For me, I'm very interested in transmedia, viral marketing. And one of my inspirations for the film was Cloverfield, done in the year, it was, I guess, 2008. And Cloverfield had, if you remember that film, it was a found footage film also about this, like, sequel. And they had this viral marketing campaign where they had something called Slush-O-Cola and Taraguto, and they put it all over the internet, different videos, and you have to kind of find it. And I always thought that was fascinating. You know, you not only have a film and now also a tie-in to the film, you have a second film, right? Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is, I guess, a loose spinoff. But then you have this viral marketing campaign. So we actually have a Peterson Research Institute site you can go to if you want to, at PRI-research.info. And you could see the various cases of people who saw parallel universes. And those cases are in the film, and they're also in the comic book. So we try to tie it all together to make it one neat little package.
So that is pretty cool.
Fascinating.
That's very innovative. You see, that's what you call thinking outside the box and pushing the envelope.
Yeah, without a box, right?
Exactly. And Occupants, of course, you had mentioned, uses found footage, but it uses a separate branch of found footage. Instead of using the shaky cam, we see a lot of personal computers communicate the story. So can you please provide insight on using PC computers to translate your narrative?
Well, it wasn't actually PC computers. It was we used a professional camera that the DP owned. But we made it look like computers because you always want the master footage, and then you could dumb it down if you want to make it lower quality. But you can never up-res it and make it higher quality. There's always going to be some data loss. So we did use a professional camera to be able to shoot this. And basically, here's the thing, and I mentioned Cloverfield again. I love Cloverfield. However, if you remember, around 50% of the audience, I think, they experienced nausea because mm-hmm. it was so shaky. It was so shaky that I remember seeing the film with my friend Neely, and she got sick, and she had to get out of the theater after 20 minutes.
Right.
I was fine, but I'm like, I guess, the fortunate 50%, you know, who didn't get sick. So we wanted to try to avoid that, because we didn't want to turn off 50% of our audience. So we came up with the idea of static, a lot of static camera shots. Now, of course, having static camera shots, one problem with that is, this found footage too, is where do you cut? Where do you edit? What's your, you know, cut points? What if the actor flubs a line or there was a technical problem, maybe a fly flew into the shot, which did happen, by the way. So we came up with the idea, and I remember Julia, the writer, she had the same question. She's like, Russ, what are you going to do? How are you going to edit this? I'm like, we just glitched to the parallel universe and back. And that's what we did. We just kept glitching to the other universe, and we glitched back, glitch. And that helped to stitch the story together. Because there was no other way to really edit this. I mean, you know, I guess you could use jump cuts, but we didn't want to do that. Okay. So we wanted something smart, and that was how we did it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it, you know, that was the challenge of found footage, especially static found footage shots. Now, on the other hand, there was this one scene in the film where, because it was static, we were able to use visual effects and put it together. And you may know which scene I'm talking about, but basically you have two Annies in one shot.
Right, right.
And I won't say anything else, but let's just say if the shot wasn't static, it would have been virtually impossible
right.
to create the shot. So there are pros to using static, and there's also cons, but that was a very big pro for us because for us, that was our money shot, and that took us about 5 hours to be able to shoot that shot. And wow. during those 5 hours, that's when the actress had to dye her hair to transform. That was the last shot of real Annie and then the first shot of parallel Annie. So it took 5 hours because unfortunately the first dye job made her hair silver. It was not permanent. Then after the second try, we're like, can we just go permanent for you and we'll just re-dye your hair blonde once the production is done? Of course, we'll pay for it. And that's what ended up happening. So 5 hours, there was not much we could do. The set, it was in the kitchen, was a hot set, which basically nobody could touch. If the camera had moved, if anything had just a little slight imbalance, then the shot would have completely failed. So for me, that was one of the worst 5 hours of my life.
Oh, my gosh.
I was talking to my fingers, please. And then you never know what's going to happen until you actually put it together. I did have my laptop with my editing program, and Eric Kask, I mentioned, was the associate producer. He was also the behind-the-scenes videographer, and he shot Video Village, which is the monitor that myself and the script supervisor, Alex Sanders, we look at, right, in order to see shot content and performance. So he shot video of that. There was like 4 takes with real Annie, then 5 hours later, 4 takes with parallel Annie. And I put it together. And that's when I knew we had a movie because it worked.
Oh,
it worked
so
well. I'm like, yes. I mean, I know that we had to do a lot of visual effects to make it work, but still, I knew at that moment that was the money shot and we got it. So that's when as a filmmaker, that's when you feel really good.
Of course, most definitely. You have that elation, especially when you have your software there. You're so anxious just to see it and to get that view. Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's such a great feeling. Of course, if it didn't work, it would have been such a downer. So, you know, I mean, I get to use this word. I've used it many times. Grateful that it just all came together. The stars just aligned, and I was just very happy about that.
Glad to hear that. And one other thing that I noticed when watching the film Occupants, is it safe to say that there's like an underlying social commentary going on, especially digital communications, social interaction? And the metaphor is the parallel universe, because the main characters are on their computer, they're watching a parallel, but that also associates with how society is with Facebook and Twitter and how people are engaging in the lives of other people.
Yes, you're right. And there's a sense of voyeurism in the film. You know,
right.
And they're voyeurs, right? They're watching themselves, which is kind of creepy if you think about it. But yeah, this is the world we live in now is people texting each other or, you know, emailing or Facebook messaging. And it's become a lot more impersonal. I mean, look how they talk to Dr. Peterson just through Skype.
Right.
From halfway around the world. He's in Sri Lanka. They're in Los Angeles. Do they really interact with any other person? There's only one instance. It's the pizza man in the parallel universe. That's it.
Right.
So, yeah, you're right. It is a kind of a commentary on society where we don't really talk to each other. We don't really interact like we used to because of all this technology. Now, on the other hand, I'm talking to you via technology. So, you know, I'm using my iPhone to be able to record this conversation with you. And there are things with technology that I find very fascinating. So this is the upside to technology. For instance, you can watch a film or a TV show on your phone now. In fact, I'm reading a book on my phone.
Right.
I just purchased it yesterday on Kindle. So, you know, whether that means that I'm more lazy, it could mean that, you know, I just stay in my bed and watch TV rather than, you know, go to an actual TV, turn it on and then flip through the channels. You know, but technology has become more accessible. And then there is a side where I don't think I would be a filmmaker today without digital technology, because shooting on film is very expensive. Even making a digital intermediate from from digital copy, let's say from film to digital and then back, if you have visual effects, is very pricey. So to be able to shoot digitally, to be able to edit it that way, do visual effects that way, everything about it, it made it a lot more cost effective. So there could be that commentary too. You know, the pros right. and cons to technology. In relation to this film, technology is used to have people record, and in the film, this is in the film, and send to the Peterson Research Institute their testimonial videos, which would not be possible without the internet, without being able to upload a file. So.
Right, exactly.
The Curtises, the Annie and Neil Curtis, they're able to see this video and different articles that Dr. Peterson sent them because of technology. So, yes, you're right. They just interact with their gadgets. But on the other hand, they're able to get information because of those gadgets. So, pros and cons.
Always the pros and the cons. And that the great debate is which one outweighs the other. That's the other debate.
No, it's very, very true. You know, the other thing for me about this parallel universe, the reason I was attracted to it, is because I'm both American and Japanese. I'm half white and half Japanese. I grew up in both countries. So I understand dichotomy. I understand, you know, how sometimes your own mind can conflict with yourself. And so when I directed Annie in Parallel Annie and Neil in Parallel Neil, it's like seeing two sides of my own self. I thought that was very fascinating. That's one reason I was very attracted to the script, because I could understand that duality. And, you know, basically, it made me able to direct them better, because I understood what it was like to live two different cultures, if you will.
Okay.
So I applied that to this film, and I hope it came through when you saw both sides of the universe.
Yes. And that brings me to my next question, now that you bring it up. The topic of parallel universes, that's been a scientific theory since the 50s. So when making this film, what insights did you pick up, did you learn about, did you discover on this topic while making the film?
Well, I am a big fan of the multiverse theory, which is infinite number of universes all connected together. And I watch shows like Fringe or Sliders, read books by maybe Asimov, Bradbury, even Baxter. And basically, I personally believe there are infinite number of us's. And what choices we make at a certain venture will determine what path we take. So we actually brought in for the comic book tie-in a second universe, which is going to be explored in the sequel, because I truly believe it's not just one universe.
That is absolutely true. I also share the same sentiment with that. I mean, the theories out there, there's a probability of that, you know, that could be the case, multi-universes. And as a matter of fact, recently it hit the internet by storm. They have something called the Mandela effect. I don't know if you've heard of that, which the theory is that a parallel universe, there's a shift in the matrix, and something that shouldn't be there is there. And you know, a lot of people come up with some examples and what have you. But the theory is possible.
Oh. Are you talking about like certain words?
Excuse me?
What was it? Oscar Meyer and Oscar Meyer.
Right.
I read about this. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
I read about that theory. I've also read that we might be living in like a hologram or a pocket universe. I mean, I read the scientific websites. I go to space.com. I'm very curious about this.
Right.
You know. What happened before the Big Bang? You know, can we create another universe within the universe?
Right.
You know, is it a parallel universe? Is that a different universe? What is it? You know, there's just so many possibilities, which I think is fascinating. I think that's why science fiction is so popular. And science fact is based on science fiction, which is also why, by the way, I watch Star Trek.
Right. And I noticed you mentioned Star Trek and not Star Wars, because Star Trek, they really focus on the technology and the theory of science, and they implement it in their gadgets and technology.
Yeah, you're right. And that's the difference. And I love Star Wars too, don't get me wrong. I think Star Wars is like a space opera.
Right,
Star Wars is ingrained in technology. And I remember that one episode called Relics with James Doohan from The Next Generation. It was about the Dyson Sphere. And it's an actual theory.
Right.
And they explored it in that episode. And it made me do research on the Dyson Sphere, which basically is, you construct this big structure and you live inside it. And then you house the sun, a sun. And that's its the power source, if you will. I just think it's incredibly fascinating that certain things on Star Trek are coming true, like the transporter. You're able to transport atoms. They have done it.
Right.
Whether I want to use a transporter, I don't know. But the fact is, they are, what used to be science fiction, like the communicator.
Right.
It became the flip phone.
Exactly.
They had the pads, that they do work on in the Next Generation. Now they're like iPads.
Exactly.
So I think a lot of things on Star Trek inspired technology of today, and that's what makes the show so so inspiring for me. It makes me want to watch it. So I do want to watch that new show that's coming out, Star Trek Discovery.
Right. That's true. Yeah, so you make now that you brought that up, I almost forgot about that show. And also, you brought up not to digress away from the topic, but you brought up the Dyson Sphere. And there was a news article a few months back that scientists discovered that there is a sun in a faraway system that potentially has a Dyson Sphere because it's emitting a strange light. And the theory is it could be artificial.
Yes, it's because something about the amount of light that it's emitting, I think that's what it was, right? It's like a bizarre. I kept reading about that, and I hope that's true, because that would be a proof of a intelligent alien, you know, civilization. Not just aliens, but actual intelligent aliens. So, I think that's very fascinating. I hope they're able to prove that one.
Exactly. Sometime in our lifetime.
That's the problem, isn't it? So far away.
Exactly. excuse me. And for occupants, since we are on the topic of science fiction, in dealing with science fiction, we always see these films. They have a lot of effects and elaborate eye candy. So what was the direction to go with the found footage route and to have low input with visual effects?
Well, for me, I don't want visual effects to be the story. Mm-hmm. I wanted to service the story. So we used visual effects in a, hopefully, what people consider a creative way. Of course, it's budgetary also. Right. We ended up outsourcing our visual effects to people in India and the Philippines. And they did a wonderful job, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, what I wanted, I was actually inspired by Interstellar and the wormhole, which is basically an inverted image, a circular one. So when we created the portal effect, what I wanted was something like that. And so what the visual effects team in India asked for, and the head was Manikandan Satyabalan was his name, was to get images of the room where the portal effect happened, and so that you can actually see it on the structure. As it's transporting, quote unquote, whatever thing it's transporting to the other universe. So we used it, and it's very sparingly in the film, but hopefully, it works for people. So it was 3D effects. It wasn't two-dimensional visual effects. We actually used 3D. Now, because I mentioned the static shots, it made it easier to put in the visual effects.
Okay.
You know, if the shot was moving, it would have been harder to track it into the shot. So in that sense, it was a big blessing for us. So we were able to do it. I mean, our most challenging shot, honestly, and again, it was static, so it was able to work, was the fire shot. And I'm not going to say anything else, only okay. That. Hopefully it looks like real fire. But it was very fast.
Right. Well, I picked it out, but I was so into the narrative that I just totally bypassed if it was real or not.
Well, thank you. I think it's like, I just hope, like you mentioned, Act 1, Act 2, Act 3, and hopefully you had prologue and epilogue, right? It's just like a standard script or a book. So hopefully after Act 1, you're like, oh my gosh, I want to see what happens in Act 2. And after Act 2, you're like, oh my gosh, I want to see what happens in Act 3. And then after Act 3, you're like, oh my gosh, I want to see more. That's right. What I hope.
And the curiosity is
I hope we kept people on their toes, so they don't realize what's coming. That's what we hope.
Right.
And I remember in some of the screenings, when people started gasping at certain moments, and it always happened that these like three certain moments in the film always happened. And I was like, yeah, you know, because that's what we wanted. We wanted that reaction. You know, people right. Like that. And you can hear that. And they just gasp. Like they didn't expect it. Well, that was the whole point, is you don't want people to expect what's coming. And you want to keep them pleasantly surprised. So I was very, very happy for those reactions. And there's other moments where people laughed. And I mean, laughing, you had to in a film like this. Because honestly, this film is kind of a downer. So if you don't have comedic moments, I think people need to release their stress, or, you know, they need to vent somehow, right?
Of course.
You need little bit of comedy to be able to do that. And there's this one moment where it was comedic, and then right afterwards it was such a downer. And I think you needed that, you know, that release. So yeah, we kind of did that on purpose. And I think it just, it was the script combined with the acting, combined with the, you know, the cinematography and just everybody. It just ended up working. So yeah.
Right. Right. I'm glad it's doing so well in the film festival circuits, and leaning on that, the platform is open. If you could share more information on Occupants, you did share the website, and it's on Amazon. With any other information you may have?
Oh yeah, so occupantsthemovie.com is the website, and when you go to that site, they have links to the Amazon site. You have links to our comic book campaign, to the Peterson Research Institute site. So, you know, basically, you just go to that website and you're able to explore whatever you want and see photos behind the scenes, see the trailers. So, yeah, I mean, that's the site to go to. My own personal site, if people are curious, I have a new feature film I just directed called Whisper Project. That's RUSSEM.com, and you could see the various films. There's one that we just completed called Collar. That's right now, you know, we're submitting to film festivals. And the producer is Troy Gabaldon, who's also the writer, really great guy. And another one called Assassin's Apprentice, which is written and produced by Paul Hickman and Howard Nash and Ryan Husk. And that one has Robert Picardo also on it. And Marina Sirtis, which was kind of an honor for me because I grew up watching her on Star Trek The Next Generation. So that one's in post-production right now.
Great, great. Some good films to be looking forward to.
Well, I appreciate that, again, that you had me on the show. I just want to just tell you how grateful I am. So thank you, Mr. Artuz, is that correct?
Yes. Yes. And you got it right on the first try. Yes. Artuz.
I'm glad, because, I'm usually not very good at pronouncing names. So thank you.
Same here. That's why sometimes when the names are, foreign or slightly longer before the interview, I say, hey, how do you pronounce your name?
Yeah, I mean, my makeup artist, Alicia Vironis, she'll know that I kept calling her Alicia. She always berated me for it. Sorry, Alicia. Anyway. But thank you so much. I really do appreciate that you had me on the show.
You're welcome, and thank you for your time, for answering these questions, and best of luck on your future projects.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And the same to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen, for another episode, DK Mag Podcast. This is Season 5, Episode 7. Of course, you could find our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. And be sure to follow us on social networking platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google+, Did I miss any, Anid? That's it, right?
Yeah, well, I did good this Instagram time. And
yeah, I did good this time. Usually I forget one. And my name is Ken Artuz, founder and editor for DK Mag, and my co-host this evening were
Enid Artuz, content contributor. And don't forget to listen to our music in Google Music.
Our music.
Our podcast on Google Music.
We don't have music yet.
Stacey Cox, staff correspondent. We're on Stitcher. Be sure to rate and review DK Mag Stitcher rating and reviews and help us rank.
And of course, you could visit us at dkmag.com. That is DECAYMAG.com. And I emphasize, we're not DK Magazine or DK or the letters DK. We are DK Mag. And thank you, Haley, Joanna, and Jeffrey from 52 Weeks of Horror for serving as special guest co-hosts on this podcast edition.
That's right. This is Jeffrey Potts and Haley Joanna. Haley, where can they find more of us? 52 Weeks of Horror.
They can check us out at 52weeksofhorror.com. We're also on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch now, and Pinterest. Everywhere else, it's 52 Weeks of Horror.
That's right. And what we always say is don't forget to keep making that scary.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.